I guess we start where we left off. I wish we could leave Jim off. He upsets my serenity. I'm Franklin Williams, no relation.
Hi,
Franklin. And I'm an alcoholic.
Hi,
you heard me say alcoholic. I'm not an alcoholic, huh? I got a friend down in Lake Providence, Louisiana, Dr. Tom. He was at a browned up not long ago, and everybody that got up there, they were alcoholic and a drug addict. An alcoholic and something else. Alcoholic and something else. So when Tom got up there, he figured he had to identify himself like they did. So he said, I'm an alcoholic and a circumcised male. So somebody asked him, what the devil did you mean by that, a circumcised male? He said, well, said, I've been out of pocket for a while and come back and everybody's an alcoholic and a. And said, I thought they had changed the traditions and I had to identify like these others were. Bill says, or said, that if Alcoholics Anonymous is ever destroyed, it'll be destroyed from within. And I thoroughly believe that. And there are a lot of us that have been around for a while are very much concerned about this. Some of you young ones, we ask you to leave off that and business, and you've done it. But others seem to fight it. They'll read this thing that General Service sent out for each group to me to read before closed meeting and another one before the other. They don't pay any attention to it. And this thing is real serious. I want Alcoholics Anonymous to be here when, if I ever have any grandchildren, where it'd be a place for them to go. And if we can't get some people concerned enough to try to help us do this, we are in for a hard, long road. We decided to have a bowl game at my hometown. The Alcoholics is going to play the Anders. But we found just car loads and bus loads of Anders, but we couldn't find very many, just alcoholics. And those alcoholics were all old and decrepit. But the thing took care of itself. All them Anders got disqualified because they broke the rules. Now, I think in Alcoholics Anonymous, we'd say they broke the traditions. And that's what they did. This thing is more serious than I'm making it. But it really does require each one of us help in this area. I think that all of these terms originated at treatment centers. But once they get out of treatment centers and get into a group, well, the treatment centers no longer got anything to do with them. And I need to encourage. I think the people that are breaking those traditions, and they are breaking traditions, they need somebody to straighten them out and explain it to them. I think it's the group, it's the responsibility of the sponsor to do it first. But in many cases, they don't have a sponsor. And if they do have a sponsor, that sponsor don't give a damn one way or the other. And then if the sponsor don't do it, I think it's the group's responsibility to do it. The group that I belong to, we take care of it. The very first night, we tell them. And then if they forget about it, the next thing, we tell them. And we tell them very gently. But then we don't get too gentle. We tell them if they don't want what we have, well, get them an alcoholic and a group, and don't tear up our group. I'm glad to be here. It's a lot of good, friendly people here. And I've had a wonderful time. That Al-Anon didn't appreciate what I was doing for him yesterday. I was trying to teach him to be of service. I knew there's something deficient in that Al-Anon program. But we got a few more days to work on him. We haven't got much to work with. But glad Brother Jim showed up. Well, he can help me with it. You know, Bill said these new cats want to know by what authority is this. You tell them Alcoholics Anonymous is a textbook. Bill says that we can't be everything to everybody, and we know that. But there's one group that we work with and are real successful with. And for us to stick to our last, do that which we can do, and not spread this thing out. And why do we want that? Because I never did use drugs other than alcohol. And when they get to telling a drunk story with shooting this and shooting that, I don't identify. And I'm not the only one. And that's basically the reason why Bill says this is for alcoholics. Of course, that don't mean that a addict can't come to our group. He can, but what the little pamphlet says for him to stick to is a story about what alcohol and what it did. And if he is a straight addict, he's not welcome at our group. He can come to a closed meeting, to an open meeting, but he must not participate. I think the way we've gotten to where we stretch the traditions. That's a sure way to destroy this thing. Well, let me get on with this. I didn't sleep much last night. There's a bunch of youngsters outside my room. And there's some blonde, middle-aged blonde, about 16, 17 years old. And she kept beating on my door and screaming. And I couldn't get her to shut up. And I had to get up and let her out. The text of my sermon tonight will be to keep it simple and follow directions. And I've always had problems in this area. I just cannot follow directions. I'll put something together and it don't work. I'll kick it and cuss it. And my wife would say, read the instructions. And then I'd read them and could fix the thing. But I've always been that way, and I don't seem to make much progress about it. And as far as I'm concerned, as a matter of simplicity, I can sum this whole program up, as far as I'm concerned, with six words: trust God, clean house, and help others. I was a sponsor, I was a fellow that had as tough a sponsor as ever walked. And he was the most uncouth man I ever saw in my life. He just didn't know how to treat his fellow man. And I'd tell him that. And he'd say, you don't think, you haven't got the ability to think. We'll do your thinking for you. Said, if you think you're gonna wind up in jail, said, you're not to think for a year. And if at the end of a year, if we think you can think, we'll tell you you can think. But he never let me have a thought during those first 6 years. And Bob mentioned sponsorship. I'm a fanatic on sponsorship. because I had and have still sponsorship. I've had 3 sponsors. 2 of them died. I killed him. And I got a younger one now, and he might be with me for a while. And it's more important that I have a sponsor today than it was 30-something years ago. I might as well say my sobriety date is October 15, 1956. Well, as you know, that's simply one day at a time. Keep breathing in and out, and don't drink, and you'll get that much sobriety. I have 34 years, and I didn't come to this thing with the idea of getting 34 years of sobriety. It kind of snuck up on me. Now, the only reason I tell you that is because I'm bragging. My wife died a few years ago with 93 years of continuous sobriety. And you know, she never mentioned it. So evidently, I am bragging. To tell you and show you how I'm making some improvement on that trust God, clean house, and help others, I have to bring my sponsor into the thing, and I never want to talk without paying tribute to my sponsor. I did know Bob's sponsor real well, and he was another one like my David Yates. He knew when to knock you down, and he knew when to build you up. He knew when to listen to you. A very unique person, very unique, but a very godly person and a terrific man. He loved to wake with drunks. And my little old sponsor loved to wake with drunks. David used to take me to a meeting every night. And he did that for some length of time. And then one night he put me out and said, I'm not going to pick you up tomorrow. But you get to the meeting by yourself. I said, David, you know I don't have no money. I don't have no wheels. I don't have car fare. I don't have no way. He had a way of turning his mouth up sideways and his one eye shut. And he said, we find walking helps. And I was afraid not to go because David would occasionally spring and buy me a sandwich or he'd take me riding in his little old car. I always had to do something for him in order to get him to do it. But he said, if we start taking you on a regular basis, you get to where you depend on us. And said, this is not a program whereby you depend on other people, but you depend on a power greater than yourself. You're going to have to get up off of it and start doing some things. And said, we'll tell you what to do. And he didn't fail to do that. I'm the only person I know of in Alcoholics Anonymous that was assigned lessons by a sponsor. And then the next day, take a test on it. And if I didn't pass it, I'd have to do it again. So I learned to do it in order to get some freedom from David. And he's always telling me, you got to surrender. You got to surrender. And I got so tired of listening to it that one day I said, David, how do you surrender? He said, I don't know. Well, how do you expect me to know if you can't tell me? Is it anywhere in the big book? He said, no. Well, how did it happen? He said, I'm tired of answering that question for you. He said, I've been telling you to get in the big book. He says, you get in that big book. And you'll find something in there which will help you to surrender. Well, I found this out by working the program, by applying the steps to my life. The book says this in so many ways, but the first 9 steps of this program will surrender any person who takes them. I don't care whether he be agnostic, atheist, Buddhist, or what. If you apply these first 9 steps to his daily life, you will surrender. That's the way I surrendered. And David said, I guess this is as close as I can tell you how to surrender. He said, I reached a point where alcohol would no longer do anything for me or to me. I couldn't get drunk and I couldn't get sober. He said, I got on my knees and called on a God that I did not understand for help. And help came. And that's exactly what happened to me. And I think that surrender is the most important thing in this thing. I don't think I had any success with this program or with the drinking until I surrendered to alcohol. I don't think I had any trouble with any success with the program until I surrendered. I couldn't do it, and I turned it over to God. So I don't know that it's something that you can tell somebody how to do it. But by doing the things that the book outlines, it just happens. So I got to work on that. And David told me how to do the fourth step. But I didn't want him to see what I was putting down. So I wrote a life history. And I had volumes there. And one day David is by the room, and he ran across that. And he said, what in the devil is this? And I told him. He said, let me have it. He took it and tore it into a million pieces. Said, you done lied? And said, this ain't the way to take an inventory. And said, we went over it before you did this and showed you how to do it according to the big book. But no, you wanted to do it your way. And you went to a professional man to take your fifth step. And I know the reason you went there is because you lied. And he could tell you, he couldn't tell you he was lying, but I did know that you was lying. So we later did a fourth and fifth step according to the way it is in the book. I went along for a good while, and I went to AA. And I went for 9 months, and I had problems all the way through in that 9 months. And all the time David was talking to me, and he kept fighting me about that inventory. And he told me this, and I believe it, that writing a life history is worse than taking no inventory at all. Why do I say this? Because if I bring up these old deeds and bring them out in the light and become conscious of them, it increases guilt. And I've got more problems after I finish the written inventory than I had beforehand. He said, why do you think that Bill put in chapter 3 there, in chapter 5, about how to take the inventory? I said, well, I guess he intended for us to do it that way. So, me going to AA just enough to let certain people, my wife had left me, she hadn't divorced me quite then, but she had left me. I owed a lot of people money. I was dodging them and they were dodging me, scared I was going to want some more. And things just wasn't going anywhere towards the right. And I got on the drunk, that's the most important drunk I ever got on. I didn't suffer as much physically or emotionally as I had on others, but I suffered enough. See, I said those 6 words, trust God, clean house, and help others. I said it every morning when I got up, and I said it during the day when I think about it. But I still hadn't surrendered. I still hadn't made that surrender. So, I stole some stuff, and stealing had become a way of life with me, just like drinking. And the cops caught me, and they took me to jail. And David came to see me. He was on my visitors list. And he said, what you're gonna have to do right now is get on your knees and thank God for the cops catching you on this and bringing this to Seb's way, you'll do something about it. So they sent me to the penal farm. And I tell you, I tried to sober up every drunk that came to the penal farm. I tried to sober up the warden, and he didn't have a problem. But it was good for me because it kept me busy. And I went in when they let us on Saturday to talk to the warden. And I asked him if we might start an AA group out there. He said he'd like for us to. He knew David. So I asked him if he'd call David and let me talk to him. And he did, and David said yes. Said it'd be two men with him that would come out next Saturday, and we'd start a group out there. And so they did. And I was active in that group. And I was making these boys come to that meeting. But I was staying sober. So if people say, well, you could have drank in there. Sure you could. I could get whiskey. I knew sources to get it. And if I had something to swap for it or some money, I could get any amount I wanted to. But I didn't want to. I wanted to get straightened out while I was in there. So I stayed there the regular time. I didn't get out a day earlier. I wasn't detained a day later. I turned loose. But it took a long time for me to get a job. I couldn't be insured. And I'd never done anything that didn't have to handle money. And I couldn't handle money with things like they were. And finally, two men in AA that were well fixed, somehow or another, they went my bond, and I got a job. Gradually, I'd get a little better job. And all the time, I was really working with drunks. I'd go in bars and jerking them off of stools and carrying them to the house and letting them spend the night, letting them spend a week or month or whatever it took. They'd steal stuff and pawn it, but I was still staying sober, and that was the big deal. So I had gotten awake on the steps, and David said, we're going to start at the very first with the doctor's opinion, and we're going to study it, and we're going to study it, and then we're going to go on through the book and study it. And you know, that doctor's opinion is the most important piece of information that I had seen at that time. It told me why I drank. It said I drank because I love the effect produced by alcohol. And you know, I thought I drank because I liked the taste of it. And I did like the taste of it. I used to drink that old Rosedale corn whiskey. It's just as mellow as any government whiskey you ever bought. And I loved it, but Dr. Topinion said I liked it because of the effect it produced. And I found out that I'd gotten restless and irritable and discontented. And I knew that if I reached for that drink, I'd get that glow that I used to get. And I knew that I had to do something or I would reach and get that drink. So I got with David. I went on to the clubhouse that night about an hour beforehand, and I always had to do this. David had me to come early, and we'd have a meeting before the meeting. And when that meeting was over, the big meeting was over, we'd go out to his car and sit there an hour or so. And I think the meetings that I went to outside of the meetings were the best meetings I ever went to. Alcoholics Anonymous is, was, and always will be one drunk talking to another. And that's where I got most of my AA. So we went on through that doctor's opinion. And then he says, he gave me a test on it. And then we got into the other, and he said, let's turn to the page, to the fifth chapter there, about what to do, and said, he had me to read at the end of the 12 steps, the promises, And he asked me, what did those promises mean? What did they take care of? He said, they are purely and simply to take care of the first two steps. The first two. He said, nowhere in any AA literature does it tell you, give you instructions to take steps one and two. He says it don't. He said, turn to the end of the promises and read me the next few words. So after those three promises, well, he said, I want you to study chapters, well, the next four chapters after the doctor's opinion. And said, do you know why I want you to do that? So that you will get the first three steps. You'll get the first two steps, and then you'll be ready to take the third step. So we went out on the lake that Saturday. He loved to go out on the lake. He'd sit on the log out there, and we'd read in the big book. Now, this is something that's important to me. David never told me something to do without reading it in the big book. And he had me to read it in the book. And he said his reason for doing that was that if I went outside to some other group and heard something that wasn't in the book, I'd recognize it. And I told him there's more bad stuff floating around in AA than was good stuff. And know where some of these things originated. Like, you don't have to write the fourth step. By whose authority is that? There are a lot of things that are said about AA that are not true. And I've got to be careful what I say to a new person, because I'm dealing with a terminal illness, and I can kill this alcoholic. So we went through those pages, and I had a clear identification of the first three steps. But after the promises, it says, being convinced, you are now at step three. Now, being convinced of what? The first two steps. So then he had me, let's get to work on step three. And he had me to read up there what to do about this. And, you know, after being in AA over 9 months, about a year, I didn't know that Bill suggested that we offer a third step prayer. I didn't know that Bill suggested that we take the third step with another human being. So I took that third step with David. And then he took his with me. This is another thing that's important. It's important for me. When David had me to read how to work a step and had me to take it, David would take it also. He spoon-fed me the thing. I didn't tell you how I got my sponsor. A very unique way. Absolutely against my wishes. But I went to my first meeting in January. I think it was January the 17th of 1956. And they didn't have a meeting at the church, but we met at Marin's home. Marin's wife, Jerry, was an alcoholic, and they had David over there. See, they sublet me from the very beginning. And David seemed to be the chairman. And David said, you don't have a sponsor, do you? I said, I don't know what a sponsor is. I don't know whether I have one or not. He said, well, says you got a sponsor. I'm your sponsor. How'd you get to be my sponsor? I said, I haven't even been to a meeting. I haven't paid the dues. I haven't done anything. How'd you get to be my sponsor? He said, well, said it's kind of unique. Said, we had read about you, and didn't any of us want you. And we put three straws in a hat, and we drew straws, and I lost. And said, I'm your sponsor. And says, you'll find out in time to come. You just do what I tell you to do. And I attempted to do it, because I didn't think anybody else in the world would fool with me. It had gotten down to where it's just three, and then it got down to where it's just one. And I still had that sponsor until he died a few years ago. So I continued to meet David before the meeting and after the meeting, and then for him to make me assignments, and then for me to bring back that written thing. It had to be written. He said there's more action if you write it, and it's more effective if you write it. So I didn't argue with him, because I didn't want to drink anymore. I almost died. So I really believe that if I'd start back drinking tonight, by in the morning I'd be drinking wine, because wine was a drink of my choice. And it started out for financial reasons that I got on wine. But I got more benefit out of wine than I did anything else. So then David said, after I had taken the third step with him, he said, read this third step prayer. And then after you read it, well, quote it to me as closely as you remember. So I read it, and then he had me to come over there by that log and kneel down. And I knelt down, and he knelt down by that log. And I offered the prayer, and this is about what I said and about what I say today. God, I offer myself to thee to do and build with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, so that victory over them may bear witness to those that I might help of thy love, thy service, and thy way of life. May I always do thy will. David said, we all right now. He said, I know where our problem is. Our problem is in 4 and 5. And he said, do you know why I want you to take number 4? I said, I know what the book says. He said, well, the book don't say this, but this is the reason. You want to take number 4 so you can take number 5. I said, that's brilliant thinking. I said, is that in the big book? He said, no. You can figure out some things if you study that big book. You got to take the 4th step before you can take the 5th step. And said, it's going to take some doing. So we turned in chapter 5 to the explanation of step 4. And Bill starts off by saying, we think selfishness and self-centeredness is our problem. And I thoroughly agree. Everything that's ever been wrong with me, every character defect, every single thing, reverts back to selfishness and self-centeredness. It's unbelievable the part that selfishness and self-centeredness plays in not only an alcoholic's life, but in every human being's life. But the advantage that we have is that we know what it is, and we cause it, and we know what to do in order to get rid of it. Maybe not for very long, but for the time being, we'll talk about that. So David had me to read in that paragraph the 3 areas of my life that I needed to examine. And he gave me a legal pad, a yellow legal pad, and the top of each page he put one of those reasons. At the top of the first page he put resentments. The next page he put fears. And the third page he put sex. Now he said the first resentment is going to require a whole lot more space than that one page. And says, I know what a lot of your resentments were, because you'd get drunk and you'd let those resentments come out. So he said, you take that pad and sit on every resentment that you have. Don't put anything else except the resentment. Go on down the list and list every one of them you can think of. Then, now Bill says that the purpose of a 4-step inventory is to find out causes and conditions. What caused me to have this effect, and what was the end result of it? So the chart They're on format, the format on 65 lists resentments. Said, I resent Mr. Brown. Why? Because his attentions to my wife. What effect does it have on me? It affects my sex. It affects my companionship. So I went on with all the others, and what's the end result? The end result was fear. And I listed all of those, filled out the rest of it, and got the end result of fear. So stopping right there, what did I get out of a four-step inventory? I got that my real problem was ego. Bill says, we eat, we drink, we grasp for more of everything, fearing we shall never get up, get enough. Now what is that but trying to fill ego? There's no way to do it. Ain't no way. Old boy at home loves to fish and loves to drink wine. And he was going fishing, and the little old ponds were frozen over, and he couldn't get minnows. But he went to a minnow place that had always bought minnows. And the man was overstocked with minnows, and they were dying. And the old wino asked him, he said, how much are your minnows? He said, all you want for a dollar. And the old wino didn't bat an eye. He said, give me $3 worth. ain't no way to satisfy a human ego. So my problem was ego, and my solution was faith, because faith is the only antidote for fear. So I went on and I listed the character defects under step four. I didn't know that character defects played such an important part. On pages 71 and 72, it says, character defects representing instincts gone astray, being the primary cause of our drinking and failure at life. Now, I never would have thought that. I thought my wife was the cause of my drinking. I didn't know it was my character defects. There's a lot to be learned from that fourth step. Then I listed the people that I had harmed. And in step eight, it says you made a list of the people you harmed in step four. So I did that. And I put the same thing. Why? First, let me tell you where I got that instincts. Bill, Dave had a 12-12 with him. He always took a 12-12. He took the big book and he took a dictionary. But he looked up those in that second paragraph on the study of the fourth step, where it said three God-given instincts of sex, emotional and material security, and companionship. And David said, get back up there, I resent Mr. Brown. Why? Because his attention to my wife. What effect does this have on me? He said, put under the effect any one or all of the three God-given instincts. And I went down the whole deal, and there wasn't a single one of them that didn't affect all three instincts. Sex, emotional and material security, and companionship. And so I fill that in out under the effect. What effect did it have on me? So I told you that I put on my character defects. I put on the people that I had harmed. So then Dave told me to turn in chapter four, in step four, to these instincts, and to read them out, and I did. And he said to use them. So then he said for me to read after the fourth step, to examine this proposal, the fourth step, to examine it and see if you've left out anything. If you have, well, write it down and have it ready with your fifth step. And said to go to your room and get in a quiet place and to read the fourth step. And said, if you've done a full solution on it, a full test on it, we'll go on to step five. So in step five, I had been to the room and I had prayed and I had asked God to help me with this. And so I was ready with step five. And it took me a good while with cap five to make a list of the people that I had harmed. I did it in step four. But it took me a good while to pray for willingness. And there's a whole lot more praying in this deal than there is than I thought. And I had to do a lot of praying in step five to make me willing to do something about these people that I had harmed. And gradually, as I was making progress, I got down to one person. And I told David I absolutely was not going to make amends to that fellow. He says, you're going to get drunk. And which do you want to do? He said, my car will be here at the club room in the morning at 7 o'clock. And you beat up here and take it. And you drive down to this town about 75 miles. And you make amends to that fellow. Well, I didn't know it for months and months later, but David had called this fellow and told him that I would be in his town and to be at a certain place at a certain time. And I thought it was odd, the first place I pulled up to in this town, there was that fellow in his car. He got out and he met me, and he embraced me and kissed me on the cheek and told me he loved me. Now, he was an old-time member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we became the very closest of friends. I don't think I would have had to have said anything, but I think it is necessary that I do it, that I show that much humility. And I've always considered that one of the highlights of my AA experiences. And I really love that fellow. So, then the next was to humbly ask him to remove them. Now here, it takes a lot of praying. See, I had to get ready, and I had to be ready before it really worked. And I had to pray for God to make me willing on this. And he did. And I was able to get rid of those character defects temporarily. I never have completely 100% got rid of them. Because the reason I haven't is because ego returns. If ego didn't return, well, they wouldn't bother me. But ego does return. And sometimes it can return in 35 minutes, sometimes 3 or 4 days. It all depends on how badly I hurt. And if I hurt badly enough, I'm going to make some amends, because I don't like pain. But thank God I can recognize these things and I can do what you have taught me to do. So then we went on to step 9 and 10. On page 72 in our book, 76 in our textbook, well, it explains the 8th and the 9th and the 9th and the 10th, and it don't take much explaining to do. There's more praying than there is anything else. And after I finished step 7, Dave said, let's take that 7-step prayer and offer it. And so I read it, and then I knelt down there on that log, and David was down there by me. And I said the 3rd-step prayer. I said, my Creator, I am now willing that you take all of me, the good and the bad. Remove every single defect of character which stands in my way of my usefulness to you and to my fellows. May I always do thy bidding. David said, we are fine down to now. We are down through the ninth step, which I was praying to do in that ninth step. So there I say that if I do these first nine steps, best of my ability and honesty, I will be surrendered. This program will surrender me. It did surrender me. And I've known a lot of members, sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous, who say that they surrendered through taking the first nine steps. I've known a few people who come to Alcoholics Anonymous already surrendered. I wasn't one of those. I had to be shown. I had to suffer that pain. And when I suffered enough, I did something about it. And I still do something about it. Continue to take a personal inventory, and when wrong, promptly admit it. Promptly with me can mean 10 days, 2 weeks, 2 months. Depending on how badly I hurt. If I get to hurting badly enough, I'm going to do something about it. And it's been an important step for me. I hear people say you take the first nine steps and throw them away. You don't have to fool with them anymore. Steps 10, 11, and 12 will take care of it. But don't say that in my book. And if you'll show it to me in your book, I'll believe it. But I don't believe it's there because it's not in mine. We've got certain things to do. And it's hard to get a new person to read just the black part. They want to read between the lines. They want to interpret. Ain't nothing to do but go exactly by what Bill says in the big book. He knew what he was saying. And I'm not smart enough to change it. And I don't think any of you are. I really think that this program was God-given and God-directed. And Bill, of course, Bill did the writing. He had suggestions from others in the group. But Bill was the main architect of the thing. And I still can't comprehend how Bill, with absolutely no psychological training, could devise a plan that has stood the test for all these years. All your high-powered doctors and ministers and everybody else have tried to tear it down, but you can't do it. We've got a bunch of little old new AAs that are going to change up the traditions and change it. I wish you'd leave our program alone. Come to it and enjoy it with us, but don't mix your program with ours. Go to the NA meetings. Go wherever you want to. Go to ours on an open meeting, but you do not participate. If you're cross-addicted, you're eligible to talk about your alcohol, but not your other drugs. And that's not me talking, that's AA talking, that's Bill. And so through prayer and meditation, I've taken many, many fourth and fifth steps. On page 51 and 52 of the new, of the old 12 and 12, it says the taking of a four-step inventory is but the beginning of a lifetime process. That means I've got to continue taking this step. And what's happened with me so many, many times, I'll take another four-step inventory. And some of these things happened way back before I quit drinking. But they've just come to my conscious mind. And I think God has allowed me, he's been real lenient with me. He's allowed me to work on a certain thing until I do some good with it. And then he opens my eyes to some other things. And he's been doing that for 34 years. And I know what works. So it's my job to pray to God to keep me willing to do this and to do what my sponsor shows me in the big book to do. So through prayer and meditation, to improve our conscious contact, praying only for knowledge of His will and the power to carry it out. See, more praying, more praying. Then the last step. I hear people say, you talk about alcoholism being a disease. Show me in the big book where it says it's a disease. Well, for your information, the book was written in 39. Medical Association accepted alcoholism as a disease in 1956. According to your medical authorities, there wasn't no disease called alcoholism until 1956. But it does say in there that alcohol is a problem. It didn't say that it's a disease. But we today know that it is a disease because the American Medical and Psychiatric Association have both accepted it. So sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God, praying only for knowledge of His will and the power to carry it out. The 12th step to me is the hardest of all of them. It's very easy for me to go to an AA meeting and be a regular fellow. But to go home and get me a wife and kid is entirely a different deal. Entirely different. But to take that message into my home and to live it into my home is the real apex of this program. And I know some people right in this room that have been able to do that. I've been able to do it. It's a wonderful way of life. Like Bob, I no longer have a house. I have a home. And up until 5 years ago, I had a wife that lived in that home with me, and she passed away. And I miss her, Jeff. Before she left, she took the dog. And I miss that dog. But she wasn't able to take care of it, and I was gone a lot with her, to the hospital and other places. But we had a beautiful life. And it's all a result of what you people did for me in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Sought through prayer and meditation. Meditation to me today is real, real important. I start off every morning with my 6 words, trust God, clean house, and help others. And I repeat this. And I repeat it many times during the day, as many times as I'm aware that I need to do it. But it's a regular part. And I had a hard time with this for a long time. I couldn't meditate. I'd lose my place, I'd lose my thinking, and I'd wind up way off over here. And I went to David and I said, David, I'm having trouble with this. He said, I thought you had a 12 and 12. I said, I do. He said, why in the devil don't you read it? He said, turn over there and in chapter 11 and read what Bill says about meditation. And up the top of the page, what Bill says, now what about meditation? So evidently some other people had had a problem with it, but other than me. So he said to take a good prayer and analyze that prayer and take parts of it at a time and analyze it and try to place yourself in the same position that the user of that prayer is and see where you are as opposed to where he is and what you need to do in order to get there. And the prayer that Bill had in that chapter was the prayer of St. Francis of Assisi. I think the most beautiful prayer I ever heard. And I'd listened to a part of that prayer, then I'd offer my prayer and compare. And I got to where gradually I could retain this, and I could do this for a long period of time. And my meditation will vary. Sometimes I'll get to thinking about Bob Juanita, and I'll pull a tape of him and listen to that. And I get to thinking, now I knew this old boy when he came to this fellowship, and he was a wild buck, I mean a wild buck. And after the number of years now, you saw him up here, he's as calm as anybody you'd ever run across. And he's a heck of a AA. He's got a heck of a wife. She's a heck of a Al-Anon. Now I get to thinking, now how did this happen? How did this happen? The power of force greater than I am. David took a dictionary around with him all the time, and he had me to look up words. And he had me to look up the word fear. That's not the word. Believe. He had me to look up to believe. And one of the definitions is to rely. So there's nothing that can come up in my life today that can't be handled if I turn it over to God. That I turn it over to God. Why, how do I know this? Because David told me to try it. And I've tried it many times. And I've read that thing in the chapter on thing. So I am coming to believe, no matter what comes up, it can be handled. If it came up yesterday, it can be handled then. If it's to come up tomorrow, it can be handled then. And from that definition, believe, to rely, I am coming to rely on the forgiveness of God for yesterday and the grace of God for tomorrow. And there's nothing that can come up in my life that can't be handled if I turn it over to God. The power of God. There's no limit to where I can go in this thing, because I'll never run out of power. I'll never run out of God. And that is a real comforting thought. I'll close with this old Joe MCQ over at Little Rock gives the best definition of carrying the message. He says that the message, and I say also, the message is what's in the 12th step, having had a spiritual awakening. There's no other message that I have to carry except the message of a spiritual awakening as a result of the first 11 steps. And old Joe says that the greatest carrier of a message was a cat named Paul Revere. Paul rode through the sun, through the countryside there, yelling, "The British are coming. The British are coming." Now, I'll say this, the message will take care of itself. It does in AA, it did then. But the message took care of itself. Carry the message wherever I go. And the greatest carrier was this Paul Revere. He didn't stop his horse and get on and say, "Now, if I were you, I'd do this about your marital problem. I'd do this about your financial problem. I'd do this about your woman problem." No, he just left a single message. And when he left the message, them cats knew what to do. When they said the British are coming, they knew to haul ass. So the same is true in Alcoholics Anonymous. If I carry that message, the message will take care of itself. I close the way I always close, with my football story. It's really not much of a story, but I just like the way I tell it. And I like to hear it, and I hadn't heard it today. And I want to listen to it. So if you'll bear with me, I'll tell it to myself. I'm believing that God is saying unto me, Franklin, I'm getting up a football team, and I'm going to make you the quarterback. And we're going to give you three men in the backfield that you were lost during the active alcoholism. We'll give you hope, faith, and charity. We'll give you seven men in the line that you were introduced to in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. At the two ends, going to give you honesty and humility. At the two tackles, patience and tolerance. At the two guards, unselfishness and gratitude. And at the center, willingness. It'll be necessary that you use willingness on every play. He said, this game is going to last a lifetime. There'll be no timeouts. And I'm the sole official. And any decision I make shall be signed, shall be final. So, there again, this message is what the 12th step says. So if you don't believe that this program will work, you just keep it simple and follow directions. And if you don't believe that God will help you, just ask Him. Thank you, and God bless you, and I love you.